Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Time to roll out the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. You know what happens on Friday?
Start spreading the news.
Well, of course, that means Schomburg Stu is here.
In the house again, John.
All right. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, but hey, you never know what's going to pop up over there, so you should just kind of swing by and see what's going on. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you want to hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, we greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is, oh, come on, you know this by now, it's at Sports Time Radio. Sadly, we still haven't gotten Stu on the Twitterverse there yet, but we're working on it. Of course, you can find me at Burke Time, and as always, I will pass along anything you need to Stu if you want to go that route. So there you go. We're up and rolling for a Friday. What's going on?
Oh, nothing good, as you could tell from the great baseball game today at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, like I was telling you just before we jumped on, the minute Quintana came out, I just turned the game off because the Cubs bullpen is easily the worst in baseball, and there was no reason to expect them to be able to shut down a lineup like the Brewers. So I was just like, oh, time to go find something else to do.
Yeah, well, if you don't score runs, you're not going to win, no matter how good or bad your bullpen is.
Yeah, you know, and that's the other thing. I mean, obviously you can't win if you can't hit, but it's just still embarrassing to see these journeyman guys go out there pretending to be major league pitchers and, you know, not be able to get anybody out. I mean, I would rather see you come out of the bullpen than some of these yahoos that are running out there that, you know, deserve to be cut or just, you know, outrightly released. So.
Yeah, I would resurrect my split-finger curveball.
There you go. So,
yeah, the Brewers,
you know, I did end up
signing the Cubs, don't they? I mean, they seem to handle it.
They
Cubs.
Did. You broke up with them. You did what to them? So,
I said they seem to have the Indians signing the Cubs. They seem to handle them better than any other team, at least in the last month or so of the season.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, definitely a negative there that you got to kind of look at it. I mean, I don't know what it is or, you know, how it works out, but they're pretty much owned by the Brewers. I mean, you know, there's no real other way around it. So.
Yeah, I'm pretty dominant today.
You know, the thing that always kind of gets me is it's, you know, it's not like they're facing Cy Young contenders. I mean, was it Gio Gonzalez who got the start today? And, I mean, he just completely, you know, more or less just shut the Cubs lineup down, you know, which is a really good lineup, so you don't understand what the, you know, what the problem is there.
Before the Brewers picked him up, wasn't he in the minor league system for the Yankees? Or he wasn't even in Major League Baseball?
Yeah, the Yankees were the only team who had any interest in him. They didn't sign him till I think after the season actually started. He made two or three starts in AAA. It wasn't very good. He had that clause in his contract that he had to be called up by a certain date. So when he went back to that, when he went past that date, he decided to become a free agent again, and that's when the Brewers scooped him up.
Right. Explain something to me. If he did so poorly in AAA, how was he able to shut the Cubs wanted the offensive lineup down so easily?
Well, you know, that's kind of the same question I could ask you about how a guy with almost a 7 ERA goes out and throws a no-hitter. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just kind of the way, you know, kind of the way baseball goes. But, yeah, Gonzalez, you know, 5 2/3 today, 2 hits, obviously didn't give any up. He did walk 3, but he also struck out 3, and then it was just a maraud of Brewers relievers. I mean, they didn't even really, you know, use any of their top relievers today to beat the Cubs. I mean, Jeffress didn't have to pitch, and Hader obviously didn't have to pitch. When you build a, you know, a 7-run lead because, you know, Ryan gives up 2 and Webster gives up 2. I mean, you could cut both those guys right now and nobody else in baseball would pick them up. So,
no, they're
you know,
useless. Pretty much useless.
Yeah, you know, you don't need you know, you don't need any of that. And you know, Quintana was okay. It looked like he kind of ran out of gas there in the 7th inning. Even though he didn't have that big of a pitch count, he ended up giving up 2 more, but you know, he had a solid line, 6 2/3, 4 hits, 3 runs. They were all earned. He walked 3, struck out 6. You know, did give up the Ryan Braun home run. But, you know, all in all, not a bad outing. You know, good enough to win, especially with the way the Cubs offense has been going. But it just kind of deflated today.
Yeah, he looked actually very good today, excluding that long home run by Braun. And until, as you said, the 7th inning when – even though he didn't have that many pitches thrown, maybe he just ran out of steam. Maybe he can only go 6 innings, 7 max. But, yeah, the bullpen was a disgrace, and the offense wasn't very good. So I had to chalk it up and see if they could bounce back tomorrow and Sunday.
Yeah, you know, they definitely will need to, you know, to figure something out here. You know, I mean, I know they're percentage points ahead of Milwaukee in the division, but, I mean, at this point, you know, that's not that big a deal. So, you know, we'll see if
three or four fewer games, I think, than the fewer games than Milwaukee, if I'm not mistaken. So that's why there's that disparity in percentage points.
So yeah, you know, we'll have to see how, you know, how the weekend goes, but definitely, you know, not a good start, especially as well as the team had been playing. So. You know, with, again, we'll have to see how it goes.
Right.
So.
Well, you're going to ask me my prediction at the end of the show. I know that. So.
Oh yeah, of course we will. We will get there as we always do, and you know, see how things go there with, you know, what you're thinking and how the series will go. But yeah, definitely not a. Not a good start. Obviously, I know you won't be predicting a Cubs sweep, so you've got that one in your pocket, at least.
Right. Well, I wasn't going to predict that anyway, so.
So, you know, you'll be okay there. So, but yeah, I don't know, just kind of always kind of frustrating when the series gets started off like that, and it's like. You know, and then I think they were the only early game, weren't they? Did anybody else even? I don't
believe
think anybody else
correct.
Played today. So,
you know, if the game was also on the MLB Network, but it was just the same exact feed. It was the same feed on MLB Network that it was in local Chicago. Just
they do that. They just jump in and take whoever's feed. You know, I think last night I saw they were using the Reds feed for whatever they had going on. So, I think it was the Reds-A's game. And then, of course, anytime you watch a Yankee game, you get the Yankee guys, which just thrills me to death. And Dan always makes fun of me. So
what the,
you know.
When that happens, you get the local commercials, too, those commercials in between pitches and comments about the availability of seats and everything else and the newborn Cubs and all that good stuff. The MLB never gets to hear all that stuff also as well as the local audience.
Well, that's how it should be. You know, that's some of the best part about, you know, streaming. I mean, come on, what was our favorite commercial when we used to watch that bad wrestling program, the bail bond lady?
Yeah, that was better than the wrestling.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think that was pretty much the only reason I turned that show on was to see that commercial, which is kind of sad, but, you know.
Yeah, that was really a humorous commercial.
It took me a little while to even figure out what it was for. I didn't even realize it until, a little while in, and I was like, oh, okay, that's what they're doing.
I've never seen a commercial similar to that in the Chicago area. Must be just a small market type commercial.
Well, you know, I'm sure you remember, I don't know how many other people remember this, but remember Bob Luce always did his own commercials with the rest, you know, and then the wrestlers did stuff for like One Stop and, you know, those places like that.
Yeah, those are pretty funny too. I think I remember Moose Cholak and Dick the Bruiser and Bobo Brazil all did spots for that One Shop place.
So, yeah, definitely they were all in on that, and just kind of how it went, you know, in those situations, I guess whatever works for you. But yeah,
right.
You know, it's always kind of fun, you know, who's out there, you know, doing these kind of, you know, and they're, yeah, I mean, obviously they're all kind of silly, but you know, who's out there doing this silly commercial for, you know, whatever they're doing. And, you know, some of them are humorous, so you got to give them credit for that at least.
I don't know if you've seen any of these on YouTube, but Reggie Lasowski, The Crusher, and Mad Dog Vachon, and Nick Bockwig all did commercials for various companies in the Wisconsin area, which are all very funny, very humorous to watch.
Yeah, no, those I haven't seen. Maybe I'll have to look those up sometime and just kind of kick back and you know, check out that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's probably a long history of wrestlers doing that, right? You know.
So. I'm sure. Yeah, they can be pretty funny. And when you think about all the ones all the wrestlers we just mentioned, they're all gone. Every one of them no longer with us.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's the tough part about the business is, you know, most of those guys died pretty young. I think they had a lot of those guys were the exceptions, though. A lot of those guys hung around a long time. So.
Yeah. They all had a long tenure in the business, 15, 20 years, usually most, the ones we mentioned, at least 20 to 30 years. I know Reggie Lasowski started in 1948, I believe it was. So he was really in the business a long time.
So, yeah, you know, definitely those guys, you know, they, you know, got, yeah, back then you got in the business and that's kind of all you did. You know, I mean, you didn't really look to go anywhere else. You were a wrestler, so.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't going to bring it up, but I don't know if you've seen some of these shows on the Vice Network called Dark Side of the Ring.
Yep.
And they had some interesting documentaries. I don't know if you had a chance to check any of them out or not.
Yeah, I have seen the Von Erich one, and I just caught the Gino Hernandez one last night.
Right. Yeah, that was pretty interesting, pretty intense, especially the one with Charlie Wolf, I think his real name was, right? Charles Wolf,
yeah.
Jr., a.k.a. Gino,
yes.
Hernandez, who had a tremendous amount of charisma. I remember watching him compete and very flamboyant and successful in the ring, but I guess his demons did him in.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of, you know, the other negative when it comes to, you know, professional wrestling is there's always that kind of cover of drugs over it. And, you know, Gino really, you know, well, really got caught up in the lifestyle.
Yeah, he did.
You know, and it affected him.
Do you find that happening? And I know we're kind of getting off our main topic, but did you notice any of that activity in the independent scene as compared to the incredible amount of it happening on the national scene?
Yeah, you know, obviously the most difficult part is it does happen on the indie scene, but these guys don't have the money that, you know, like a Gino Hernandez has or some of the other guys, you know, like the one before the Von Erichs. You know, Mike and Kerry both ran into issues with drugs and ended up taking their own lives.
Right.
They obviously they had the money to go out and do this. And I mean, like, if you saw the Gino Hernandez one, there's people who just confirmed the fact that he literally pulls a cereal bowl of cocaine out of a cabinet. So you can just imagine the price tag.
Ooh.
And there's just no way, any indie guy anywhere is going to be able to afford that. So, it's not as over the top as that kind of stuff, but yeah, it does happen quite a bit.
Yeah, it's hard to control your exes sometimes. And of course there's always speculation regarding Hernandez that they found so much cocaine in his system that they thought it might've been actually a murder. And that story has circulated for years. I know.
Yeah, that was the one thing that, they kind of cleared up, last night. When I saw it last night, they had a guy on who sat with him, and, there was no foul play involved. So that was interesting. And then what I actually really did enjoy about the Von Erich one, as tragic as it is with that family, was the fact that it was pretty much Kevin telling the story, which I'm assuming was obviously greatly, greatly difficult for him to do, but it wasn't just some outsider's view on the family.
Right.
It was actually Kevin, who went through it all.
It
wasn't
easy for him to do that. And I'm glad he's living the good life in Hawaii. He seems like he's content. And to go through those series of tragedies is really sad.
Yeah, and I mean, he's got two sons who just signed on with MLW, Ross and Marshall. So I'm sure Kevin will be making appearances there with them. I know he's done it once or twice with them before. So, we'll see how that goes for him.
Yeah, they both seem to have a good look.
Yeah. So, you wonder if, I know MLW is kind of, I guess you could call them up and coming. I don't think they're monetarily set up to compete with WWE or even this new AEW that we're going to see. So you wonder if maybe there's a bigger stage for them out there if things go well there.
Yeah, the big thing is getting a TV deal, a national TV deal. And that's not easy to do.
Yeah. So, if you're getting a national TV deal, you need big money, to obviously be able to put on a professional looking show. And, I don't know if their product is going to kind of measure up. I mean, it's to the point where you can question yourself if, TNA is actually a major promotion now with what they've got going on.
Yeah. They don't even call them TNA anymore. I think they call them Impact, and they're on an obscure cable channel that very few systems get. I know I don't get it. I'm trying to remember the name of it, but I don't get that in the Comcast system. I'm not sure if you get it in your system, but not many systems get that show.
I actually do get it. It took me quite a while to find. I honestly didn't realize I was getting it because I've never watched a program on there. And I'm trying to remember what it's called. I'm just kind of drawing a blank on what it is. So, I know they and then of course they're in the Friday night slot. So, it's not like they're in a fantastic area. Oh, that's it. Here you go. I binged it. It's the Pursuit Channel.
That's right.
If you're looking for Impact. So hopefully, like you said, you don't get it. I happen to be lucky enough to actually get it. So,
not that I would probably watch it anyway.
I'm trying to think when the last time I did flip by it a few weeks ago. And I never watch more than a minute or two just to kind of see what's going on because let's face it. I mean, it's not wrestling anymore. It's much more akin to gymnastics than it actually is an actual professional wrestling event. So I just kind of looked to see if it was anybody I knew, and, you know, then I moved on. And, you know, that's kind of – I do the same thing with WWE on Monday and Tuesday. I tune in to just kind of see who's there and if it's anybody new, and then I go away because I know they're not actually going to wrestle. They're going to go from high spot to high spot, and it's just, you know, an embarrassment. So
yeah, that's a sad thing about the current crop of professional wrestling. It's all high spots and clotheslines and skits and promos that we've talked before, and there's not one company out there that takes a chance and really shows wrestling the way it used to be in the 50s, 60s. It's all the same tired formats.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's like, I assume once AEW gets up and running, you know, because I know I keep hearing that their TV show is going to debut in the fall. My guess is that the show is going to kick off, and the very first segment is going to be Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks out there cutting an extremely long promo to get the very first show kicked off, because, you know, it was kind of their, you know, it's kind of their baby with the money from, you know, the Khan family. So that, you know, that's my guess is how it's going to go. And then next week they'll probably cut another promo in, you know, whatever's going on. And I mean, every single show starts with an interview.
Yeah, that's the trend now. And I was surprised a year or two ago when they had a show in Chicago. I think Young Bucks and Cody promoted it, and it sold out in just a few minutes. So that surprised me. That really surprised me that they did so well.
Yeah, it's surprising, and I know the Young Bucks deserve some of this credit, but Cody Rhodes really deserves credit for making the indie scene kind of interesting now. You know, for the longest time it was, fat guys in their gym shorts with their t-shirts on because they didn't have the build or knew how to wrestle. You know, they were coming out of a backyard. And, you know, he got out there and really, you know, him and his wife Brandy really self-promoted, after he left WWE. And you got to wonder if maybe they missed the boat with him and they just didn't give him the right platform, because he's made himself a star.
Yeah, I always thought he had a pretty good look in the ring, too, and seemed fairly credible to me. He had some decent moves, and he looked like a wrestler. And that's important to me, that he didn't have that look. And he seemed to have a nice physique and had some decent technical moves. He looked okay. And can he use his name? Can he use the Rhodes name, by the way?
I mean,
no circle? Is that name is not copyrighted, is it? His last name, can he use the name Cody Rhodes?
Can he
only be known as Cody?
Yeah, because I believe that's his real name, I believe, so you can't copyright that.
Yeah, well, the real name is actually Cody Reynolds, don't forget.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Maybe
Dusty owned the last name? You know, maybe Dusty owned the copyright on that, and they don't have it? Because he's using it, and, you know, I know, I believe their first show, he's supposed to wrestle what was Goldust in WWE. He won't be able to use that. I don't know if he'll be Dustin Rhodes or what they'll do with him, but they're supposed to wrestle each other. You know, they're trying to make that one of their big drawing card matches, so we'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah, that's right. He didn't, when Dustin Runnels, Goldust, went to WCW, he had to use a different name. I can't remember quite what it was, but of course he couldn't use the Goldust gimmick.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know even when he made that short stop, I think it was still TNA at the time, he had to come up with another character. I think he was Black Rain or something weird like that.
Yeah, I guess Vince McMahon and the WWE are quite stringent when it comes to those copyrights of names. I think it's the first thing they try to do is copyright a name. And years ago, it was never like that. I mean, the same wrestler, whatever, Pat O'Connor was Pat O'Connor, no matter where he wrestled. Either was in the American Wrestling Alliance, or the NWA, or any other federation. he was still Pat O'Connor. But that doesn't hold anymore.
No, and, you know, it's always humorous when you see these guys who have left. You know, like I know the two guys they just booted, Enzo whatever and the big Cass guy, they're using the names, but they're spelling them differently. So they're kind of working their way, you know, slowly but surely around it. And yeah, you know, I mean, it's just things guys have to do, you know, otherwise a lot of them are, you know, unrecognizable. You don't know who they are.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you recognize them, maybe you recognize the face, but the name is completely different. So I'm sure that causes confusion.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just, and you know, I mean, you know, with merchandising the way it is now and, you know, all that stuff, I understand why, you know, why the copyrights are important, but, you know, and in a lot of cases, you know, these are WWE creations, you know, they came up with the name, they came up with the ideas behind it. So, you know, I mean, I can understand why they're copywriting it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm wondering, by the way, and maybe you know the answer to this one. The WWE, I think they're on tour now in Ireland. When the same wrestlers compete night after night, is it the same match or do they vary it?
No, you know, from what I understand, it's basically the same match. I think there's minor differences here and there. But, you know, the worst part is, I mean, with today's wrestling, let's face it, they're all the same match. You know, the only thing you see different are the finishers. So, a very simple match in today's wrestling is, you know, you go one high spot to the next high spot with punching and kicking in between, and you set up to go home.
Yeah, I read a story years ago that when Buddy Rogers, the late Buddy Rogers, was a U.S. champion before he won the NWA title, he had a series of matches against Bruno Sammartino on the East Coast, Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York, night after night after night. Every match was exactly the same. The finish was exactly the same. But it doesn't always work that way. For example, another story I read, that one of Bruno's favorite opponents was Killer Kowalski, and they were great friends behind the scene, but they had a certain chemistry about them when they wrestled, and someone said that he saw him wrestle up and down the East Coast four or five nights. Every match was different. There was no two matches the same. They had enough of a chemistry at least to put forth a credible match without the same finish, same differences night after night after night. And that's a testament to those guys' skill, especially Kowalski, who kind of was the one who led Sammartino, especially in his younger part of his career.
Yeah, what you have to remember is you're talking about two different eras of wrestling. You're talking about two guys who were trained to get in the ring and call the match without having to sit in the locker room next to each other and go over it move by move by move again and again to remember it. Where nowadays, with these new guys coming through, these matches are laid out for them.
Yeah.
You know, they're basically kind of give a script and here's what you're going to do, you know, and make sure you get this in because it's your finisher.
Right, right.
So
I remember reading that in the old days, the way we were talking about, as you mentioned, the 50s, 60s, when there was heel versus face, the heel was the one who called the spots and set up the match.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Well, here's something else that you also don't see today. When I started back in the 80s in the business, we had separate locker rooms. You know, the faces came out of one side and the heels came out of the other. Depending on how the building was set up, you couldn't talk to the guy you were wrestling except for the pre-show. So once the show started, that was it. You got in the ring and you called what you were going to do. And, you know, here you go.
That's interesting, because I remember reading years ago that they had separate dressing rooms for the heels and the faces. But I guess that's another thing that doesn't happen anymore.
No, because guys have to sit together now and call, you know, literally I've seen guys in the locker room write down move for move what their match is going to be. And, you know, like guys used to try to do this with me and I'm like, hey, you know, you can plan out whatever you want to do, but I'm never going to remember it. I'm like, just listen to me. That's all you got to do. You know, and you know, that's what leads to, you know, being able to go from high spot to high spot, because you're already pre-planned and you don't need to grab a hold and work an arm or grab a headlock and talk to a guy, because you already know where you're going. I'm going to go jump off the top rope again now. Okay, great. Well, I'm going to cut you off this time. You know, it's my turn to jump off the top rope now. So.
Yeah, that's the way it is now. Yeah, they always,
you know,
I always
you
remember
know,
years ago when the fans would, there was, when the two mortal enemies would drive from one territory to another in the same car, and maybe they got a ticket and say, hey, what are you guys doing? You hate each other. How could you be in the same car? Because they really tried to keep it believable to the fans in those days.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that was pre-internet, where, you know, you couldn't, you know, and not everybody had a cell phone. You know, I mean, I know, like, I just saw a YouTube video. I didn't end up watching it. I just saw the title. But Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair recorded something together just this week. And I think they're wrestling each other at the next pay-per-view, and they're supposed to hate each other. Now, in real life, they're best friends.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But now, you know, this never would have happened, you know, however many years ago. You know, and if it did, either one or both of them would have ended up being fired.
Yeah, that's, boy, things have changed in the business, haven't they? Well, you've seen it all.
So,
of course, you've seen it in the 20 years. You were in the business 20, 25 years. How that it's changed so drastically over the past, what, decade at least, or maybe 15 years?
Yeah, it is so weird with just what today's wrestler doesn't understand about the business. It really doesn't help it that, you know, there's a pop-up fed on just about every corner every weekend with, you know, honestly, guys who probably shouldn't even be in the ring. You know, they're not well trained enough. It's just they're gonna go out and jump off stuff and break stuff and try to imitate what they see on TV, and hopefully nobody gets hurt. So
yeah, but as we've seen, though, it's unfortunate, and we maybe have talked about this before, sometimes these guys who haven't been trained are really severely injured. What about that guy in Wisconsin? I think he wrestled in a bar a few years ago, and it was his first professional match, and the spot went wrong, and he didn't survive the bad spot.
Yeah, you know, and that's tough. And I mean, you know, luckily in today's business, there aren't a lot of guys who go out and, you know, beat the new guys up. You know, that used to be kind of a badge of honor when you started, is, you know, your first couple of matches, you went out there and got your butt kicked. So.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way anymore.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, that's, you know, that's one of probably the better things in, you know, in the business that's happened. So, you know, because there was never a need for that. And we actually, when I was teaming for a long time, I teamed with Big Daddy Rack, and
we actually had
a little incident with a guy where he beat up a rookie for really no apparent reason, and we had a battle royal later that night, and we threatened this guy, and he ended up begging his way out of the battle royal because we were going to show him what it was like. You know, hey, you want to beat guys up? Okay, well, here's two big, you know, 300-pound guys. Let's see if you can beat us up.
That taught him a lesson, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, and he begged his way out of the battle royal and did end up apologizing to the guy that, you know, he took what they call it, you know, taking advantage of him. So,
yeah, yeah.
You know, if a guy screws up a spot with a veteran, he's going to get the stiff one just to kind of get him back in line. But it's not to the extent of what it used to be.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mention that because even, you know, we know it's a work sport, but I remember many years ago watching the matches in the early 50s from Southern California. That's when Wilbur Snyder first made his start in the business. And one of the heels came on and the announcer said, well, I understand that you really gave Wilbur Snyder the cauliflower ear. And he said, it's like a badge of honor. That's right, I did. And it was no joke. It was not a joke because you can't fake a cauliflower ear. And it's just a spot that maybe was intentional. Who knows? Teach a rookie a lesson. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's one of it's one of those things. You know, it does happen from time to time. You know, I mean, there are kids, especially now with all the backyard wrestling, kids come in thinking they know everything. I mean, I don't know how many kids started training just before, you know, people stopped letting me train because I was too hard on the guys, that just, you know, couldn't even lock up. Well, no, I don't want to lock up. I want to go do this 360 flip that I do all the time. Well, no, you've got to get to that. You don't, you know. So.
No, it's all different. It's so different now. I got to tell you one story. Just in the early 60s, I was at the amphitheater. A title match, I think Vachon was the AWA champion multiple times, wrestling Gagne, title match. And we know it's a work. I'm at ringside. And during the course of the match, Vachon takes his fingernails and scrapes them across Gagne's back. It was not a work. Because I actually saw red welts appear on Gagne's back. Now you can't fake that, right?
Oh no! How do you fake it?
How? It's impossible to fake it. He actually scraped them hard enough to cause severe red welts on his back. Of course, he tried to reciprocate later on, and you really couldn't tell because the Sean, as you remember, had very very hairy back, so you couldn't tell if it was the reciprocal. The move that he did on him worked or not. But, boy, I thought those red marks were really plain the evidence. So they may be a little rougher then. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, the weird part is, you know, they knew each other so well, and it seems like the better you know a guy in the business, the rougher you are with them.
Yeah.
It just works that way. But, you know, along those lines, I mean, how do you think those red welts appear on people's chest when they get chopped? You know, that's not fake. You know, you've got to get that color, and, you know, you have to obviously hit them hard enough to draw that and, you know, bring the blood up and all that other kind of stuff that comes with it. And it sucks after a while. Let me tell you, I know, as a guy who's been chopped quite a bit, it's no fun.
Yeah. I heard that when the guy is training, initially is starting out in training, and they whip him into the ropes, he's got severe red welts on his back just from being whipped into the ropes. Burns, is that what it is?
If you don't use actual rope, which some places actually do, your ring ropes are metal cable in a garden hose taped up, and hopefully the guy bought padding. If not, it's metal ropes in a garden hose or metal cable in a garden hose taped. And that's what you're running against, as tight as it can be put together. So, you welt up until your body adjusts to it. You know, everything hurts. You know, there's nothing you do when you're starting out that doesn't hurt. And there's no real way to get used to it except to do it over and over.
Yeah, just repetition before your body, as you say, your body become acclimated to it. But there used to be, a handful of decent trainers and how to teach someone to become a decent professional wrestler years ago. I know Killer Kowalski's school in Boston is still going strong. And he always had a good reputation. He trained a lot of wrestlers. I'm just wondering if most of them now are just charlatans, and you don't really learn the business.
Yeah, what happens now, you know, and I'm sure this is still going on, is, you know, a guy goes, signs up to train. You know, normally they stick around long enough to have a match or two, and then if they're not pushed immediately or they don't win the title, they quit and they go start their own Fed, and they believe that they're fully capable of training guys, which they're not. But, you know, in today's business, again, you don't really have to know the things that I had to know over and over, where, you know, it took me 6 months before I could debut because I had to know what the moves were and what the counters were. I mean, you know, when was the last time you saw a guy counter anything?
That's obsolete, right? But certain territories had some infamous reputation in the old days, like, of course, you heard about the Stuart Gungeon in Canada, right? That was supposed to be legit.
So, yeah, there were always, you know, places like that, you know, and then, you know, every Fed you went into, you know, had their pretty much legitimate tough guy in case somebody got out of line.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Eddie Graham had that same reputation in Tampa. People wanted to get into the business and beg, and finally they said, "Oh, we'll give you a chance." That guy ran out of the training ring in about 5 minutes, crying into the street, and they never heard from him again. And that's how tough they could be if they wanted to be on these rookies trying to make it into business. That's how difficult it was.
Yeah, it's, you know, it never used to be easy, you know, when you first started. Now it's simple because there's just so many schools. Somebody's going to take you, and, you know, sadly, you're probably going to be taught poorly. Hopefully you don't kill yourself or something else, but that's the nature of the business now.
But that's the unfortunate thing, because years ago, I think I've mentioned this to you before, it was very, very difficult to get into the business, especially in the 50s, even in the 60s, too.
Yeah.
You either had to know somebody, or else you had to have a very strong amateur background. Like, we're talking about Mad Dog Sean, who had the crazy wild persona in the ring. The guy was an Olympic wrestler, so he had the kids.
Yeah.
He may not have
Having an amateur background, even a bad one like mine, used to be, you know, an important part of being a wrestler. But again, you know, all those moves are out of the business now, you know, unless you're, you know, you happen to get in the ring with Kurt Angle before he just retired here recently. You know, nobody's doing that stuff. I mean, I know Chad Gable was an Olympian, but he doesn't use any of those moves. So, you know, it's just all been pretty much legislated out of the business because, you know, fans don't enjoy it because it slows down the action. And again, guys aren't jumping off things or flying at guys, and they don't understand that, you know, they don't understand that anymore. They, you know, WWE is taking that out of the business.
Yeah. I remember when Kurt Angle started out, I was really impressed. Here's one guy I think I could compete on equal terms with, maybe a Fez or a Snyder or a Connor or Gagne. That didn't last very long before he started going through the stupid moonsaults that never worked and changing his style to the WWE style. And I always felt really bad about that.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's like the weirdest thing is, like, even if WWE brings in your favorite indie guy, they have to go and get trained in the WWE style.
Yeah.
Because
right.
it's different. So, you know, that's the weird thing about it. Because, you know, I've had guys I've trained get signed. And, you know, when they get signed, they go to training camp. You know, and even though they've been trained or they've been wrestling for years, there's a way it's done that you have to learn. And it's just kind of scary.
Yeah, so they keep them in that farm system, what, the NXT farm system, for a year or two until they learn the WWE style. And even then, they might never bring them up to the main roster.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just, you know, just one of those, odd situations, but they've dictated. Vince McMahon has got what he wants. He's dictated how the business is going to be. Everybody does exactly what WWE does. Runs just like a WWE show. No questions asked. That's just how people do it.
Yeah, and it's not going to change anytime soon.
No.
If ever.
Not unless there's somebody with enough guts to try to establish it. I know Ring of Honor has tried for years, and obviously they're not going to get there, plain and simple. They've had their shots, and it's not going to happen. But you have to wonder if, I'm under the impression that we'll never see it again. But,
I
always kind of hope to see somebody out there going to be able to do it.
Yeah, I heard so much good talk about Ring of Honor, and I finally got a chance to see a couple of shows, and all I saw were some cruiserweights doing some tumbling routines in the ring. So that was quite disappointing, I thought.
Yeah, that's just kind of what they were. I mean, I gave them credit for allowing their guys to work and have longer matches, which is a big plus over what, anybody else does. But, yeah, they didn't do anything different as far as wrestling went, except do it for a longer period of time.
And I think you mentioned that when they did have a longer match, there was a lot of rest spots during the course of the match.
Yeah.
So they can continue.
Which makes sense.
Longer...
if you're going 50 minutes, you're going to need a breather. There's just nothing you can do about that. So you're going to have to, slow down the action and, take some time or, whatever you got to do. So.
Yeah, I suppose.
And it's definitely, fully understandable that guys do this. So. But all right.
Yeah.
Well, we ate up a lot of time with that, but I have to ask you here because, I know I won't be watching it, but do you have any plans to check out Game 6 of the Warriors-Rockets tonight? Golden State leads the series 3-2, but Kevin Durant is going to be out for the rest of it. Are you going to take a peek or spend any time watching it?
Well, maybe I'll take a peek or two. I did watch a couple of the Milwaukee games, and I was impressed with them. And how about Toronto and Philadelphia, though? I'm more interested in that one. Is that tonight also?
No, I believe that one is tomorrow. Let me double check the schedule here.
And that'll be the third game, will it not?
Actually, they do not play again until Sunday with the odd NBA schedule the way they do things. Sunday sets up with, they're actually going to have Portland at Denver. It looks like it's going to be the first game. Not quite sure about that. Then if Houston wins tonight, they're going to do Houston at Golden State game 7. And then Philadelphia and Toronto is scheduled for a 6 o'clock start on Sunday on TNT.
Yeah, now is that game 7 or is that game 6 or is that all even now?
Yeah, that's game 7. Everybody, with the exception of tonight's games, the other two series are in game 7.
Yeah, if Houston manages to win, I don't see them advancing anyway because the 7th deciding game will be in Golden State. They're pretty hard to beat there.
Yeah.
Of course, as you pointed out, Durant.
Yeah, what do you think? The funniest thing is Portland and Denver has been the best series out of all of these, and just nobody cares because it's Portland and Denver. So,
was that the one that went triple overtime the other day? Was that Portland and Denver?
Triple or quadruple or something like that? Yeah, they're having a hell of a series, but nobody notices.
Yeah, I saw one game where Portland had the lead, or was it Denver? They held the lead on the road, but 4 or 5 points, and the home team, which always used to make a run towards the end, just couldn't do it. They just kept it four or five point lead throughout the last 2 minutes of the game, which you don't see all the time. You don't see every day.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you know, NHL wise, the Blues and the Sharks don't start until tomorrow. They're actually on primetime on NBC tomorrow. And then Carolina, you know, at Boston still. Boston did win game one last night. They get going again Sunday afternoon. So, yeah, I think this is the first night there hasn't been hockey since the playoffs started.
I know that Boston won 5-2 the other day. Were those last two goals open net goals, or did they just pull away?
Sadly, you know, by the time that stuff happens, I'm long in bed. Like, it was a 1-1 game in the second period when I went to sleep. So I was quite shocked to find out that, you know, it ended the way it did. So I'm guessing, let me see if I can find some here.
Right. I remember seeing a power play goal by Boston in the third period, so they would take the 3-2 lead. But there were still 10 or 12 minutes left to go in the game. So my guess would be there were at least one open net goal towards the end of it.
Yeah, I didn't even see Carolina's goal in the second period. It happened so late, I had already missed that. So, you know, it just one of those things. But, yeah, let me see if I can get a play-by-play here and maybe pick up some of where Boston scored here. It looks like their fourth goal was an empty net goal, but the fifth goal here is listed as even strength. So,
that's surprising. But of course, they have to take their chances anyway and lose some of their defense when they're in desperation mode like that, which could lead to a easy goal on the part of Boston, who looks pretty tough so far.
Yeah, all these teams have played really well. I think it would be interesting to see like Carolina and St. Louis, just because, you know, they're kind of the underdogs here. But, you know, Boston has been the one, you know, highly seeded team that has actually played like a highly seeded team. So,
yeah, they're about the only one. I mean, it's really been up for grabs in the playoffs in the NHL this year. And that's not a surprise, because when you compare that with basketball, if you're going to see some changes and upsets and lower rated seeds winning, it's going to be in hockey and not in basketball.
Yeah. So, yeah, that, you know, especially in the, you know, the early rounds, but even like into these rounds. Well, of course, there were so many upsets in the first round of the hockey playoffs that I don't even know what considered an upset in the second round. So,
it was crazy. Yeah, Tampa going eliminated. Was it a sweep in the Tampa series too?
I think they were swept out. Yeah,
and they had the most point. They had the most points in the league during the regular season. So there's some really stunning upsets in hockey.
Yeah, who knows why? It's just one of those things that seems to happen, and and obviously the NBA. You know, it just shows how kind of top heavy the NBA is, and there's no real parity.
Yeah, it really is.
No matter what they try to do with it, you just don't get it.
But hey, how about those Wolves, though? Right? Weren't they tied 2-2 in the second round? Last I heard.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you. I haven't checked in on them, and I don't know how long. So.
Yeah, I do. Before the Blackhawks made their resurgence 10 years or so ago, I used to watch some of the Wolves games, but as soon as the Blackhawks got good, and you forgot about the Wolves, and you noticed the huge difference between the AHL and the NHL.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I, again, it, you know, the minor league stuff like that gets a little tough for me to watch at times. So
yeah, no doubt about it. Now, it's not a bad brand of hockey. The AHL is a pretty, I would say, a triple A in baseball, pretty close to that in hockey. If you're gonna watch it, you might as well watch that league because they seem to be the top minor league affiliation.
Yeah, you know, the minor leagues for me seem to be one of those things that I very much enjoy going. Like, I really enjoy the minor league baseball games, and I bet I would enjoy, you know, a Wolves game if I went. But to watch it on TV is just kind of like, man, I don't think so. So
right. Yeah, you might watch it if it was the seventh game of the Calder Cup Championship just to see how they would do, but maybe that would be about it.
Yeah, I don't even know if I would watch it then. Maybe I would check in to see what the score was or something. But, yeah, that would be, you know, about where I went.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any – I'm not sure. I don't think there's any national telecast of the AHL. It's all local teams being broadcast their games, and that's probably about it.
Yeah, so – you know, yeah, I can't. Well, you know, yeah, I mean, what? Yeah, it's not like that. I don't think they have any kind of national, you know, national comment or any, you know, contract or anything.
No.
So,
no.
But yeah, so.
We'll see what happens with that. The game that interests me is the forthcoming game this Sunday between Philadelphia and Toronto to see if Toronto chokes again, and their own home court for the seventh and fighting game.
Yeah, well, you know, the biggest problem for them is it looked like Joel Embiid finally figured things out, and he played quite well.
He played a strong game.
You know, and the worst part for them in everything is if he gets rolling and, you know, those kind of things. So
Butler also played a very solid game in the last game.
Yeah, well, you know, they need that because Ben Simmons hasn't been very good.
No.
So.
But Butler had a strong game in Game 6, that's for sure.
So, yeah, well, you know, this is kind of that thing, you know, he always wanted. He wanted to, you know, be in this kind of spotlight. So, you know, and he wasn't going to get there with the Bulls. You know, I mean, they were a playoff team a couple times, not of this magnitude where they're considered an actual, title winner. Or contender.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised to see Philadelphia sneak a win out on Sunday.
You know, they're pretty evenly matched teams, so I really think it could go either way. So, you know, and I mean, Kyle Lowry has been so bad for Toronto. You just wonder, you know, what the problem is with it.
Yeah, it's not the been a strong performance by him, and so it should be an interesting game Sunday night. Or is it a night game, right? You said 6 o'clock our time.
Yeah, it's scheduled for 6 o'clock. So, you know, of course, we'll see. You know, if move anything around or what they have going on. I think a lot may depend on what happens tonight if Golden State ends that series or if they go to Game 7. So.
Right. And don't forget, there's also the Cubs in Milwaukee on ESPN on Sunday night as well.
Yeah, too bad for the basketball game because they.
Yeah.
So, well. Oh, all right. Look at that. You know the deal. I'm gone. Get over to 420.com. I'm over there. First, hit the link. If you want to buy the Facebook page, give that a like. But don't forget the Twitter feed. Look me up on Twitter. I am at Burford. As always, big thanks for coming on and listening to us live. Remember, the podcast is available for you to listen to anytime you want. TuneIn.com. Just a quick update. No podcast today. It's Mother's Day. And it's going to be a podcast. So we will be here. So we're going to Monday at 5:30, Dan will be here.